Let us center ourselves for a time of reflection, for a time of meditation, and if it is your practice and tradition to do so, a time of prayer. Let us enter into that still place within, the center, where we find not only our innermost selves, but also our connection to the furthest reaches of the universe, and where we find our connection with each other. May we remember those who have spoken, those who have been named, and those we hold in the silence of our hearts, as perhaps their names were too powerful, too precious, or maybe even too painful to name. Spirit of life, divine, known by many names, yet not fully known by all names, we gather today with hopes and dreams, and also with fears and wounds. Rest with us today in this place. We lift up every joy, every gladness. We hold close every hurt, every sadness spoken in this community, as well as every secret feeling held quiet in the hollows of our hearts. May we be reminded that all things there is a season, that today's joy and today's sorrows will in time give way to those of tomorrow, and that those of us who have the strength to share today ought to do so while we can, and that those of us who are in need ought to allow ourselves to receive for tomorrow, that our roles might be reversed. Spirit of life and love, help us to remember those who are not here with us today, those who need what we have found here, and those who have what we need. May we always be open to growth and change, to movement and to extend love. In the many names of all that is holy, and in all the holy names that have ever been uttered, and those that have yet to be imagined, blessed be. I didn't come out until I was 37 years old. I spent all of my life up until that part, 37, here in Tidewater, Virginia, now known as Hampton Roads, Norfolk and Virginia Beach, respectively, in the closet, living a secret life that no one other than myself knew about. There are many reasons why I waited until so late in life to begin the process of telling the world about my true nature and my true identity. Most of them, however, revolved around the religious paradigm in which I was brought up and in which I lived until I was 37 years old. Many, if not most, of those religious reasons which compelled me to secrecy and my remaining closet, it revolved around a particular aspect of what was then my faith paradigm, and that is a particular theology commonly referred to as end-time prophecy. For the sake of brevity, I won't go into the extent of all the details which fully encompass this theological view. Suffice it to say, however, that for someone like me, an individual who has the gift and the ability of being able to love another person of my own gender, this particular theological view of creation, history, the world, and how the world will end was a very oppressive theology. In a nutshell, this theology sees humanity as having become depraved at the dawn of creation and has, since that time, been on a continuous downward spiral, becoming ever increasingly more depraved. The end result of this depravity will culminate in a divinity being forced to remove a particular yet faithful set of people from the world as a sign of protection, and then to begin the ultimate destruction of not only just this planet, but in time the entirety of the universe. And according to the most ardent adherents of this theology, the ultimate evil force, which the divine is forced to act upon and is forced to begin this universal destruction, is me and those like me who, as I said, I believe, have been gifted with the ability to love and receive love from someone of our same gender. You may remember what a confusing and difficult time it was when you were 14 years old. Add to the normal adolescent anxieties, the confusion around what you recognize, yet cannot fully understand and cannot perhaps fully explain, that unlike most of your friends, your relatives, and as far as you know, most everyone with whom you are acquainted, that you, for some unexplainable reason, have an attraction to someone with whom you go to school. The crux of the problem, however, is that someone is a person of your same gender. Add to this mix of swirling emotions, confused feelings, and attractions, hearing a continuing theology preached in your faith community that because you have an adolescent 14-year-old crush on another boy in your school, that you and you alone are the cause of all that is wrong in the world as it exists. And that because you, at 14 years old, have that crush on another boy, that you are so vile in the sight of God that God must send tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, and all manner of natural disasters against all of humanity because of you, and that God will ultimately be forced to destroy the world, all because you think that the other 14-year-old boy sitting across the cafeteria table from you is cute. The reason this theology is referred to as a prophecy is that the adherents of this theology believe that God has spoken a divine roadmap outlining how the world will end through a limited set of individuals collectively known as prophets, who are most commonly portrayed in Western culture as being old white men with long white beards roaming around the countryside shouting, "The end is near." Unfortunately, this very limited, very confined definition of who a prophet is and what a prophet does is, well, to say the least, inaccurate. Within nearly all faith paradigms, there are individuals either known as prophets and who speak with what is referred to as a prophetic voice, or who perform the duties of a prophet, although they may not always have that formal name. Prophets were and are of all races, all ethnicities, all genders, all gender expressions, and to use our modern vocabulary, prophets were and are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer individuals. And according to the Hebrew scriptures, at one occasion, a prophet was actually an animal, a donkey. Prophets have a unique ability to see the injustice in their societies and cultures in ways that most of the rest of their societies and cultures do not recognize and do not understand. Prophets feel an overwhelming compulsion that they must speak out, either through spoken word or action, to the inequality they see in their societies and cultures. Prophets describe feeling this overwhelming, unexplainable compulsion to speak out so strongly that some have described it as their bones aching, their heads pounding, their hearts beating out of their chest, and that they only find relief from these feelings when they finally do speak out openly or perform actions which demonstrate their strongly held views. Prophets also have the unique insight to be able to recognize the impact which injustice has on their cultures and societies. They can visualize how their cultures and societies will be forever changed if the injustice and iniquities in their societies are not properly addressed. Most of the time, those who speak with a prophetic voice can envision how destructive injustice and inequality is to the well-being of the entirety of their culture and society. The very unique dichotomy about someone being a prophet is that the proof that someone is a prophet is that they don't want to be a prophet. The Hebrew scriptures expressly indicate that anyone who seeks to become a prophet is in fact a false prophet and not to be listened to. The reason for this is in part because speaking with a prophetic voice is, as many people know, a thankless task. Most who do so fully recognize that more often than not, they won't be listened to. And their messages of equality and injustice will not be received. They understand that their words and actions and deeds on behalf of the disenfranchised are not the proper popularly held or majority view of their community, culture, or society, and do in fact usually fly in the face of the strongly held belief systems of their society. Secondly, a person doesn't want to speak with a prophetic voice because they recognize that because of their words or their actions on behalf of the disenfranchised, that they are seen as not being completely mentally stable. This was especially true of the Hebrew prophet Isaiah, whose words you're probably most familiar with because they're often printed on Christmas cards. Yet what most people don't know is that for 3 years, Isaiah records that he walked the streets of Jerusalem day in and day out in all weather, rain, snow, sleet, hail, heat of summer, completely nude. He did so because of the great inequity between the people who had the most wealth in his culture and the people who were ultimately the poorest. He told the people with the most wealth, "Look at me, see how I am. If this inequality isn't addressed, you will end up being in the same position I'm in." Within the Christian narrative, this is also true of Jesus, about whom the story is told of his family coming to, quote, take him away. Jesus is teaching a large group of people, and in the midst of his teaching, someone runs up to him and says, "Teacher, your mother, brothers, and sisters are here to take you away." That phrase, "take you away," doesn't mean we're going to Disney World. It means they were taking him home and locking him away in a spare bedroom because they saw him as being unsafe to himself or to the people around him. One of Jesus' teachings is that a person who speaks with a prophetic voice is, quote, not honored among their own communities or by their own families. And any of you who know this is true, if you've ever tried to speak out at either Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner, when perhaps a political conversation goes against your grain and you're the only one who holds a different opinion. On a side note, I've always found it interesting that Jesus is recognized as a prophet by the Muslim community. Part of the reason why I find this so interesting is the people who take it upon themselves to burn the Muslim holy book, the Quran, if they would take the time to read it as opposed to burning it, they would be surprised to discover that because Jesus is recognized as a prophet in Islam, that most of his words and teachings are actually recorded in the Quran, and that when they burn the Quran, they're actually burning some of the words of Jesus. Lastly, one of the jobs of a prophet is to be the keeper of stories unique to your culture or your society. Prophets keep and record these stories as memorials to particular events, which are usually indicative of extreme cases, of injustice or oppression. One of these stories, which I'd like to share with you today, is from my own denomination, the Metropolitan Community Church. Our denomination was founded in 1968, 1 year before the famous Stonewall riots in New York City. In the early days of our denomination, because we were a group of gay people trying to meet together for church, no one would rent a space to us or sell a building to us to meet in. So I've often said we were much like our friend Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire. We were wholly dependent upon the kindness of others. we met in very strange places and at very strange times to whomever would give us an open space. One of our churches in New Orleans did this exact thing. Unable to find a place to meet, they ended up renting the second floor of an office building. The first floor of the building was a gay bar. Didn't really seem to matter since the bar wasn't open on Sunday mornings, but it was the only place in the entire city of New Orleans that would rent to the New Orleans MCC. Yet one morning in 1972, as the congregation of about 70 people was meeting for services, the people began to smell smoke. Because the building was in a not particularly safe part of New Orleans, the owner of the building had placed security bars over all the windows, which couldn't be opened. When the people realized that the building was on fire and tried to leave, they couldn't get out the windows, and they came to realize that the doors of the building had been chain locked from the outside. The building had been set on fire because the people who did it knew that it was a gay church. The crime that killed the 70 people meeting there on that day in 1972 has never been solved, and no arrests have ever been made. It remains to date the largest single act of a hate crime against the LGBT community in the history of the United States. Yet outside my own denomination, it's a story which isn't known. The only thing that you can find if you go to New Orleans is a small bronze plaque in the sidewalk where the building used to stand. When the head of our denomination, Troy Perry, went to New Orleans, part of his job was to claim the bodies of the people who died in the fire. You see, in 1972, most of the families of the victims did not want to come forward to reclaim the bodies of their loved ones because it was too embarrassing to let the community know that your son or husband or brother or mother had died in a fire at a gay church. I share this story with you as a memorial to those of my community who suffered at the hands of injustice and oppression. So in asking the question, which was the title of my message, is there a prophet in the house in regard to your community? I feel I can answer, yes, there are indeed prophets in this house. I can answer in the affirmative because this weekend marks the anniversary of your community speaking publicly with a prophetic voice. You decided to do something very unusual for Hampton Roads, Virginia. You decided to take a public stand for my community. You spoke out against the strongly held opinions of the majority of the communities of faith in Hampton Roads. You voted to become a welcoming and affirming space and a supportive community to those like me who love a person of their own gender. You probably realize that your actions may not be perceived as popular, yet you recognize that it was something which you needed to do in order to promote justice and equality to all persons. You embrace the concept taught to us by Dr. King, injustice to one person is injustice to all people. So whether you use the technology which I employ as speaking with a prophetic voice, or if you refer to your actions as standing on the side of love, you as a community have locked arms and become partners with those of us who have the ability to see and know injustice and inequality and feel compelled beyond any reason not to remain silent. And for that, I sincerely thank you. Blessed be.